Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming back. It's good to have you here today. What we have right there in the top corner right there that Sherry and Roger have, just kind of hold it up, take a look at that. That's from one of Rittmeyer's drawings of the Temple Mount, looking at it from the southwest. So you can see the southern wall, Robinson's Arch. And after we get a little bit of introduction, it's really easy to see the details of it. So just take that and pass it around, take a look at it. Also, I've got over here some books if you want to check out. Some of you checked out books last week. You just sign off right here what you've taken. Don't keep it forever, but keep it for, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, wherever you want. I do have a couple good books here. I mean, some of them are really good. This is Rittmeyer's The Quest, trying to decide where the Temple Mound's at. This has got a lot of details in it. And here's Herschel Shank's just the history and archaeology of Jerusalem. Here's Carl Rasmussen's two atlases, his old atlas and then his most recent one that just came out last year. And that's where I've got a map of his around here somewhere. I'm not sure where I put it. But anyway, also, I've got Biblical Archaeology Review that I've been getting since the 80s. And I've got, like I talked to Sherry about it later tonight, but I've got a stack like this. And not all the articles are that great or that interesting. I mean, some of them are. Some of it depends on what your interest is in. But when you start talking about the archaeological sites in Jerusalem and Israel, I've started making some copies. Like here's, I've made like three or four copies of each one. And you just take these. All I did is just copy the article. I try to copy it in color. So you've got the color photographs, but here's Herod's Temple Mount, reconstruction of it. Charles Warren and the Temple Mount, this is the 1800s, a guy named Charles Warren. He's the guy, the plumber, that was there for waterworks, that was tunneling around. There's some actual drawings of his in here, and if you ever Google him, Charles Warren, you'll be able to find some of his drawings. Did a great job, and there's some detailed drawings of the excavation, finding where he found the central valley. He went down and found the bottom of it. I mean, it's like a mole. But very interesting. His diagrams that he drew, they still use them today to help locate certain things because they're so precise. He just tunneled up until he hit the temple wall, then started tunneling along the temple wall while it was still buried. So there's things in here that's very interesting. Also, he found what is called Warren's Shaft. We know it as Joab's, or where the waterway was in Jerusalem, where Joab went up into the city of Jabesh. You can find that. Charles Warren found that back in the 1800s. Identified it, it's been looked at several times, examined, could it really be the water shaft? And it's pretty sure it is, and there's a detail right there. Like I said, I've got a stack of magazines with articles. You may be interested in them or not. This is really, what I'm doing is kind of just a basic introduction to it, then you can take those articles and go a lot deeper with the information. So nonetheless, that's what we've got here tonight. Are there any questions before we begin concerning? We do have a meeting after class about the trip to Jerusalem if you're at all interested. Again, there's no pressure to go. It's just that some people were interested in going, so we're kind of taking care of something like that. So, yes, sir. Oh, about 15, I think. Yeah. And I think you can find a detail in there somewhere. I've got it in there. Steve? If you go online, you can already see they've already got the architectural plans drawn, and you can have three-dimensional video tour or computer-generated tours of everything. The place where the rabbis will sit, kind of like what we call the Senate, place where the rabbis or the Sanhedrin would sit. They've got all that you can walk through. It's got the pillars. You can just walk through the whole. I'll see if I can find that. Put a link on it. Yeah, they've already got it planned, drawn up, and computerized. So yeah, it'll be just like that. Right. Now, when they say, and you understand what they're saying is archaeologically. I mean, you can't find the tent. It's decayed. You can't find the rock. I mean, it was a traveling unit. It's like a traveling circus. And so it's like there's nothing left archaeologically to claim. And they say the same thing about Solomon's temple. There's no remains of Solomon's temple. Now, there's historical evidence. And there's looks like something was going on here. But they haven't actually found a stone that they could tie directly. And so when they say that, one side will say there's no evidence. There's no evidence whatsoever. And then any kind of evidence that does surface, they try to talk it away. Now, when you talk about Herod's temple and the temple, okay, let me say this. when we there's the Temple Mount and then the temple, the building, the temple. And so to really find anything, the temple building itself, I don't know if we can say they found anything from the temple. Of course, all those stones would have been just pushed over the edge with all the others. They found some things recently with where gold was melted into the stones, because there's gold around the temple, and in the great heat of the burning of 70 AD, a lot of that gold was melted into the stone, and you can see the residue of some of that. So the further they go, the more they're going to find that. Let me see if I can find a picture here, and I got to pray and get started. On the south wall of the temple, yeah, look on page 160, 159. Let's see if I can show you. This is on the southern wall. Now, who's got the, anybody still have that chart with them? The one, the map I'm passing around? If you look on that south wall, you can see on the south wall past the triple gate. You can go ahead and look at it, Marion. You've got it. No one else can see it. But on the south, or the east of the triple gate, there is like little shops along that wall, on the south wall. And what we're looking at right here on page 159 is those little shops had like a little arch. This is just an example of the destruction that remains. This is the south wall of the Temple Mount. Okay, here's the stairs going up. Here's the double gate, triple gate. And then right along here, there are shops. We'll talk about these shops right along this wall here. But there's also shops right here. And they are built up, little brick roofs built up in against the Temple Mount wall. Again, the temple's up here. But this is the mount that went around. Good chance, like we talk about the blind or the lame man that Peter healed in Acts, went running and leaping and praising God, happened right here by the triple gate as people were going in. And they went up onto the Temple Mount, and that's where they had their little churches. But on page 159, you can see those arrows I've got drawn on the picture right there. That is the in the Herodian stones of the Temple Mount. As that was in flames, those stones were burning. They burnt into and left their mark on the side of the southern wall of the temple. You can see that right picture right there. You can see the little bit right there where I'm talking about, those arches. And then turn the page. I've got a little close above it. And I've got another picture I try to take from the Mount of Olives looking at it. But you can see these shops as they are burnt into the Herodian stones, the Herodian ashlars, during that, conflagration. Is that the word? Yeah. Anyway, so a lot of that, those things were just consumed in fire in 70 AD. So, right, when the critics say there's no evidence of the tabernacle, there isn't. There's no evidence of pieces of the tabernacle. And to say we found piece of Solomon's temple, that's hard to say also. Because anything that was left of Solomon's temple would have been destroyed by the Babylonians. And then when they came in, they would have resurfaced the place and built up again. And so that's why when the Muslims were up there digging up on the Temple Mound this last few years, dumping it out into the Kidron Valley, the remains, after they pummeled it, was so devastating, because they're now into, as they dug through, Solomon's lair, and they're just throwing stuff out. So any evidence we could have found, and they did find some Hebrew inscriptions and different things like that. So there is possibly something there, but a lot of times it's buried. Like we said, of Herod's western wall, Rittmeyer has found the part of that wall at the beginning of one of the steps. So, right, the critics will say that there's nothing. And then you look at something like this; it's like it sure seems like there's something proving that there's something there. But yeah, that is an interesting comment. And that will continue probably until, I'm not sure when, continue to deny that anything exists. It's kind of like a political spin; you just keep saying something long enough, and it becomes true. The thing to do, I got to quit on this, but the thing to do is go back into Islam writing and find them talk about it in 600, 700, 800 about the Jewish temple. And then about 1920, 1940, 1960, all of a sudden it drops off that there's no temple, there's no temple. It's like, well, wait, scholars, your own scholars in 700 or 800 were talking about the remains of Solomon's temple. Well, and then, you know, we've got those quotes. So. Okay, any other questions or comments? I'm going to pray, and then we're going to pick up right around 30 AD, and I'll get through these years here with you in just a moment. Thank you so much for being here. Father, we come to you tonight in the name of Jesus, and we do thank you for the chance to be here. We thank you for these things that remain, the history that we can see, the hope of our future that's based in your truth and your reality. Again, Father, we ask that we may understand these things accurately and correctly, and that we may apply them to our lives. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, I want you to open up to page 7 of the book. I'm trying to get through the history of Jerusalem. and we keep bouncing back and forth, which is fine. You can't hardly see up here on the wall. I've got the chart starting in 4500 B.C. with the Chalcolithic Age, the Bronze Age, the Iron Age. Now we're going up through the time of David, the kings. Then comes the Persians and the Hellenistic Age, Alexander the Great, followed by the Hasmoneans, that's the Maccabees, the descendants of the Maccabees, before the time of Christ, followed by the Herodian era, going up to around 70 A.D. when the temple was destroyed. Then coming in was the people of Rome. We're going to talk about that tonight when they came in and took over the city. And they're going to continue up until the Roman period, until Constantine, the first Christian empire, takes over in 312. And then 324 begins the Byzantine Empire, where the Christians, in the Roman Christians are ruling. Up until 638, when it's overtaken by the first wave of the Muslims. The Muslims are taken over by the Crusaders coming out of Europe. The Christians try and take back the Holy Land. They're overcome by another group of Muslims who are overcome by a third group of Muslims. And then the great Ottoman Empire, which ended in World War I, continues up until what we'd say this last 100 years. And then now we've got the present time with the Palestinian conflict going on. And so kind of what we're going to talk about is we're in the Herodian Age going into the Roman period leading up to the Byzantine time period there as we look at this. I've got these dates written on here, 30 A.D., that's when Jesus was crucified. That's kind of one of the dates we're going to be looking at as we use for reference today. Then 64 to 66 A.D., this is a time we haven't talked about, but this is when Herod Agrippa, Herod the Great's grandson, was ruling, and he's going to expand Jerusalem, expand the wall out around the place of the crucifixion, or what we call the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. They're going to actually finish the temple in 64. What was began in 19 B.C. with Herod the Great took about a year and a half to actually build the temple. The temple building. Then they spent the next several years building the rooms and Solomon's colonnade, and it continued to be built up until the time of Jesus, so that the Jews themselves, in fact, if you look on page 7 right there at the top, on the top right, there's a quote, the Jews said to Jesus in 30 A.D., it has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days. And they're working with this kind of a system. Herod had begun building the temple, which only took a year and a half, but they continued building up until 30 A.D. And actually, the work on the temple continued up until 64 A.D., the work on the temple, up until the time of Paul's life. Peter's being executed in Rome, and they're kind of wrapping up the finishing touches on the Temple Mount. And when we say working on it, that means the whole temple precinct. And even as we looked at some of those pictures, we see on those ashlars, those Herodian ashlars, those parts of the stone still sticking out that they wrapped the ropes around, they were still coming around and cleaning those off because some of them were still left on there today that they never got to. During this period right here, during Herod Agrippa, the temple's done. And now you got to believe that some people have made a career out of working on the temple. I mean, where do you work? I work on the Temple Mount. And these men had come and worked for years, their entire lifetime were spent on the Temple Mount. Their father and their grandfather, their job was to work on the Temple Mount. Now the Temple Mount is done. And so there's a great unemployment at this time, 64 to 66 A.D., and one of the things that they did at that time was he expanded the city, built the wall out further around, and they put down some of the pavement stones that we'll take a look at when we see the pavement stones going on the west side of the Temple Mount. All of those were laid down during 64 to 66 A.D. by Herod Agrippa as they kind of cleaned up the city and tried to find work for the unemployed temple workers. Okay, so that's 66 A.D. Well, about 66 A.D., that is the year from 66 to 70 A.D., that is the year that the Romans or the Jews revolted against Rome. They decided we're going to throw off the power of Rome, and they led a revolt against Rome. It's going to take Rome several years to move their way into Jerusalem. And so by 70 A.D., they're actually going to then burn the city down, tear down the temple, burn it down, and it's going to be a four-year war. If I can draw a map, well, you can see a map of Jerusalem right. Well, let's draw a map of Jerusalem. Here's the city of David. Here's the Temple Mound that was added by Solomon. The city kind of extended out this way, and then during Herod the Great's time, it went up and around like this. So it's a lot bigger city. This is the Joppa Gate right here. It was in that day, or the Western Gate. Today it's the Joppa Gate. Rome, actually, when they came in around 69 A.D., came in this way, went up on to this side, and came in over Fort Antonia. There's a moat right here, water right here. We'll take a look at that. I should show you some pictures of this. And they came in over the top and went through the Temple Mount and then spread out through the city like this. So this was their line of attack through the city. We can see the remains of that. And that was up until 70 A.D. Then between 70 A.D. and we'll just say 70 to 73 A.D., The Jews had been destroyed, scattered. The city is just being run over by the Romans. By 73 A.D., the fire has settled down. I mean, the battle is over. They're set up some kind of a government there. Rome is building in the city. They're reconstructing the city. And in 73 was when the Christians came back from Decapolis on the other side of the Jordan. Simon, who was the bishop or the pastor of the Jerusalem Christians, led them back in. And between 73 and 132 A.D., it was basically a Christian city. There was Jews started trickling back in. Well, they're going to trickle in. They're going to take over again. But during this time period, many of the holy sites were identified and churches were built. So you can find the remains of churches during this time. Now, they're going to be destroyed by the Persians when the Persians come in the 600s and destroy them. But a lot of these sites right here were Christianized by the Christians at this time. In 132, the Jews that have been trickling back in have decided it's time for another revolt. We can do it this time. And they actually take over the city, drive the Romans out of the city. They begin to rebuild their temple on the Temple Mount. They actually begin to mint their own coin. We can find some of their coins. In fact, they took some of the Roman coins and re-stamped them. So you can see find Roman coins. I don't have any myself. But you can find a Roman coin with the emperor's image on it, stamped with the new Roman or new Jewish. And they dated it the first, second, third year, the 132, 133, and 134. They're dating them the first year, the second year of the revived Jewish empire or kingdom. And then in 135, Hadrian, the emperor, comes in and shuts it down. I mean, just destroys the place and basically bulldozes it, says no more. And this is where Hadrian then builds a temple on the Jupiter, I think it is, on the Temple Mount. He's going to build a temple and an idol on the Church of the Holy Sepulchre site. He's going to put statues up of himself on the Temple Mount and does some other things as he tries to. Oh, he builds the Cardo and basically names the city. Let's see if I can spell it right here. Turn to page 9. You see right there, Aelia Capitolia, A-E-L-I-A, Aelia Capitolia. Now, Aelia is one of Herodian's names. Like, they have several names. Aelia was his family name. Then the part right there says Capitolina. That was named for the temple in Rome to the three gods that they worshipped. I think you can find that information on page 9, the second column. It says the Capitolina refers to the Capitoline triad of supreme deities in Roman religion, Jupiter, Juno, and Minerva. And Hadrian renamed the land then after those three Roman gods and his family name. He names it Aelia Capitolina, and renamed, if you read that next sentence right there, renames the land of Israel, no longer Judea or Judah, names it after the Philistines and names it Palestine. So now you no longer have Jerusalem in Judea or Jerusalem of Judah. You now have Aelia Capitolina of the Philistines or Aelia Capitolina in Philistia or, as we'd call it today, Palestine. And so that was all done in 135 A.D. Now, we'll better get on some notes here. I'm just rambling right now. But what was interesting about that war, if we look, I'm way ahead of schedule here. I'm going to have to go back. My goodness. I want to say this, then I'm going to go back and go through some notes. If you look on, where is it at here? Oh, here it is. I pulled one of my pages out of my book. That's why. Go back to page 8. And this is just plain interesting. We think it's ridiculous that the Jews try to throw off Rome in 70 A.D. and then again in 135 A.D. Just look at that. 70 A.D. and then again in 135 A.D. What would that be? Is that 65 years? The Jews are destroyed. The temple is taken down. The city burnt in 70 A.D. Jews are no more. Within 65 years, they lead a revolt. Actually, it would be 32 A.D. is when it began. They lead another revolt. So now we're going to bring this down to, 62 A.D.? Is that correct? 62 years later, they have enough ability, power, resources to bring Rome into another three-year war. That's amazing. When you have a four-year war with Rome in 70 A.D. and then are completely annihilated and come back 62 years later and have a three-year war with Rome. And what's really interesting is right here, when you look on I'm trying to see the exact place on page 8. Look at the bottom page or left column on page 8. After a three-year war, Emperor Hadrian defeated the Jews again in 135. According to the Roman historian Cassius Dio, who wrote around 200 AD, so about 70 years later, the Jews lost 985 of their villages, their major villages in the land of Israel, were burnt to the ground, and they were basically just burnt out of existence. The loss and cost for the Romans was also severe. When Hadrian reported his victory over Jerusalem to the Roman Senate, he did not greet them with the customary opening phrase, "I and the army are well." He skipped that. In fact, if you look at that next part I've got right here on the rest of the page, at the very bottom, like the last four lines there. Therefore, Hadrian, in writing to the Senate, did not employ the opening phrase commonly affected by the emperors. If you and our children are in health, it is well. I and the legions are in health. That is how they always report. When they came back and gave the war report, I and the legions are in health, and everything is well. If you and your children are well, everything's good because the legions and myself are well. That was the first time that was not brought in, because when they got done, they'd actually lost, if you read in here, they'd lost one of the entire groups, entire legion of soldiers was no longer there. It was completely wiped out. It's in these notes somewhere here. Top right column. Okay, the 22nd Legion was completely, the Jews destroyed that entire legion of troops. I mean, they're no longer historic. They're gone out of history because of the Jewish war. Again, just kind of keep that in mind on what the Jews were capable of and why the Romans were so intent on keeping them down, because if you don't keep them down, they're going to come back in another 60 years and do it again. And indeed, they're going to continue to try. Okay, let's go back and go back to 30 AD on page 7. I'm going to just walk you through some pictures here. Herod and the priests, they built the temple. There's all the information there at the bottom of page 7, beginning in 19 BC. They built the temple building itself was 15 stories tall. The blocks that they used were white stones, special stones out of a special quartz. So the stones themselves were white, 37 feet long and 12 feet high is how Josephus records those stones. Again, cut with the trim, the Herodian Ashlar design on them. Josephus describes a temple that went with these white stones being 15 feet high. When the sun rose in the east and shined on it, it looked like a white glowing building. The temple was magnificent, not just because of the gold, but because of these white stones and the brightness that was shining off of them. They spent the next 8 years building rooms, arches, and the colonnade around the temple. When you look at a temple mount, I'm not sure if I've got a good picture. I may have some pictures, some models in there. But if we look at the temple mount here of Herod's, they've got a colonnade. And that would be columns all the way around with a roof over it. So all the way around the Temple Mount. And this was called Solomon's Colonnade. This was a special place with the pillars and rooms. This was Solomon's Colonnade right here where the El-Aqsa Mosque is at today. And the temple would have been sitting right here. So it was surrounded with a colonnade. So you could walk around it with a covered sidewalk all the way around the Temple Mount.
Go to page 141. 141. Between the years of 64 AD, now we've looked at these pictures before, but just kind of it's nice to put them in historical perspective. Those stones that we were mentioning earlier, you can see them on page 141, 142, and 143. This is on the west side of the Temple Mount. So now we're coming right down the Temple Mount, right down here, and these stones have been excavated here, and they've been excavated buried in the ground up in here. We've talked about this before. But there you can see some of those stones. In that first picture, we're looking south. The western wall of the Temple Mount is on our left. And you see the stones all piled up there. That is from the Temple Mount up above. That's where the Romans, those fell in 70 AD. And they crushed. Now you see there's a little grid right there on that first picture. There's a little kind of a grill, kind of like a gutter right there where water can run down. Because directly underneath there is that gutter that we've talked about that ran all the way down to the Pool of Siloam. If you got on this sidewalk that we're on page 141 on the left, and you just continue to walk south, you're going to walk right down the Pool of Siloam. You're walking right down past this old city of David into the Pool of Siloam, going down some stairs. You can see the curb on the right side of that photo. You can see the curb. That's the 70 AD curb, and there would be one on the left side also. And you can see Tony sitting down that picture there, sitting on the curb way down in the background. That's Tony sitting there. See that? That's, she's sitting there waiting for me to get done taking pictures. You know, being a good wife, you know. Now, on this other picture on the right side, I'm looking back up. I've gone down kind of where Tony's at right there, and I'm looking back up this way. And you can see the crushed pavement where that gutter was. The stones came in there and crushed down on the gutter. Those are the stones that were put there with Herod Agrippa when he was doing the repaving in 64 to 66 AD. Probably the temple laborers who had finished the work on the temple were now employed. Let's repave the streets. What do we do with all these guys? He kept them busy. Turn the page one more time on page 142. You can see another picture on the bottom of page 142. Now you can see the curb on the left side. You see on the left side, the little curb of that street? And that again is the Western Wall right there. The picture right above it, the top picture on the left side of page 142, there's the rubble that just fell down. That's been there since, 70 AD. Yes, ma'am. Because they have. If we look in this Charles Warren right here and his Temple Mount, he's got pictures of when they actually tunneled down into those and found those buried there. They were covered up with layers of dirt. It went all the way very high up on the wall. A good image. Go to page 147. Page 147. I'm just grabbing this picture here quickly. On page, well, there's other ones, but on page 147, the top left picture there, that's Robinson's Arch right here. This is in a section called the Western Wall Shops. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But right there you can see Robinson's Arch. It comes off right here. On the west side, it was the springer, and you can still see the springer that supported it. And there was a way that came down like this, and we've talked about this. We got to do some more talk about it. Anyway, you can see how that's excavated today. All that stuff was buried up until 67 A.D., not even there. Benjamin Mazur, how do you say his name? His granddaughter here, Elliot Mazur. Yeah, M-A-Z-A-R, Elliot Mazur. That's his granddaughter. She's excavating the City of David right now. But here's some details about the Temple Mount excavations. Someone may be interested in this right now. This is her and her grandfather in the back. Her grandfather Benjamin came in 1967 when the Jews took control of the city and started digging and started excavating. And all this stuff was buried. And you can see pictures. The reason I've got you looking at Robinson's Arch is up until that time, you can find pictures like this on the internet. I don't have any that I own myself, but I'm working on getting some. They could walk up. There's pictures of people walking up to Robinson's Arch on the surface, leaning against the wall, or sitting on Robinson's Arch. That's how high the dirt was, way up to there. And they've moved that dirt out and excavated down into the first century. So, yeah, they've cleaned all of that up. All those rocks that you see right there have been washed off. I mean, they were buried for 2,000 years. So all the dirt's been moved, and the rocks have been left in place. And again, I assume they sprayed them off and cleaned them up so you can see them. And so you can actually walk down that sidewalk. But that was not, in 1966, you could not even see, you didn't even know that was there. You didn't even have any, it was just a guy named Charles Warren had gone in and done some tunneling, says there's some stuff down there. That's how they knew it was there. And Benjamin came in and used his diagrams and started excavating. Now look on page 146 while we're here. Okay, the reason I've got you on page 147 was to see that Robinson's Arch, how high it is. And in the early 1900s, 1800s, all the way through church history, you could walk right up and just touch that. That's how high the ground was, right up like that. But now all of this is buried down. If you look on page 146, well, you can see Tony. You see Tony sitting there on the curb right there on page 146, the top photo right there. She's in the bottom right corner there. She's texting somebody or something. I don't know. But you see how that curb kind of continues down? Those are storefronts right there. Those are storefronts just, as you go further down. Over against the Temple Mount wall, there is also storefronts. And again, I don't have a real good picture of those on this page right here. But that's where you could walk along the Western Wall, and those are most likely controlled and owned by Annas, the high priest, the one that Jesus got in trouble with, because he controlled all of this money. He was the godfather of Jerusalem, in a sense, and all the money filtered through him and his shops right through here. Okay. Any other questions about that? I just wanted you to see the pavement. That was, please, yes. They're very similar in the sense, of course, they're not made out of rock like this. But one of the things about when you walk down the streets of Jerusalem, the storefronts aren't large. They're not like Walmart, obviously. But, I mean, they're narrow. But when you go in, they go back. So you just keep walking back. And so these would have been long and narrow. And they're not like shops like that. You got to think of more like a main street, an old-fashioned American main street. You have store, 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 store. Even then, the stores weren't large. You'd have a little storefront and go in like that. So they're more like this, and then probably even more condensed. But even today, the stores in the old city. Now, when you go outside of the old city, there's two worlds. There's the old city world. You go outside, you know, the modern city. There's shopping malls. There's clothing stores. You just like you go out to the mall, you know, and to take your wife over there and do a good job. You put her out here in these rocks for a few hours, but you got to get her to the mall and you know, let her do some shopping. You know, now I mean that in a good way. I mean, we would go off and we'd pick out clothes and stuff. It's kind of fun because everything's written in Hebrew. You know, you got to try and communicate in Hebrew, and it's just like you know, being in a mall here. Yes, sir. The stones there? No, those stones are stacked up. Those are cut stones. And so those are built and stacked up. And again, we got to be careful when we look at it, because they would have had, you know, they're cut and decorated, but also there would have been, many times there's wood on them. You know, like when they talk about, when you see a gate system today, it doesn't look like much of anything. It's just like some rocks piled up. But a lot of that stuff, when they talk about they burnt the gates, well, there's stuff on those gates that were being burnt, like wood and decoration. So a lot of these storefronts, this is what remains after 2,000 years. So you got to think of more of this as like the studs of the house. This is what's remain. Of course, our studs wouldn't be here in 2,000 years, but you know, the pillars, the substructure, and then everything was over the top of it, covering it up. So yeah, I wonder about doors. There had to be doors. I mean, they just leave their shops open at night. So I mean, so there's a whole. This is the only thing that's remaining there. And that's one of the things that Rittmeyer does a good job, and other guys do, is they find these things and then they begin to draw and put the flesh on it so you can actually see. Even to go up on the Temple Mount, look, right, laying right there on the ground. That's remains of the temple. Don't forget your question, Steve. I'm going to show you this. I did notice this on the next page. Oh, where did it go? Oh, yeah, on page 142. On page 142, there's a photograph there on the top right, and you see that stone standing up in the background. Actually, what we're standing on the pavement there, looking at the storefronts. You can kind of see the storefronts there in the background, but there's a stone standing there. You can see that stone standing there kind of about like this, you know? And you can see, if you look closely, and it's one of those things I didn't get a good picture of, I don't think, but it's got some deck, it's got like a raised up here, it comes across like this, it's raised up right here. It's raised right here. You see that little line on that? That is from the Temple Mount. That, there you go. All right, there's the remains from the Temple Mount. That was up there. That was a decorative trim that came down with the Roman ruins. And then that next stone that you see in the forefront of that same picture on page 142, skip across to the next page, and you got a close-up of that stone. And that is, like I've said this before, that is the cornerstone that was up on the very top up here on the corner. And that's where the priest would step up. You see how it was like a railing going around the top of the Solomon's colonnade up there. They could step up there, and then they'd step right against that. And it says right there in Hebrew, if you look down, I've got it exactly what it says right here. Well, let me read what Josephus says. You see right here on page 143, I've got a little paragraph right here, right out of Josephus, right here on the right above that Hebrew inscription on the bottom of page 143. And you can read it yourself, but I'll read it to you. Above the roof of the priest's chambers, which would be in Solomon's colonnade, it was the custom for one of the priests to stand and to give notice by the sound of trumpet in the afternoon of the approach and on the following evening of the close of every seventh day, announcing to the people the respective hours for ceasing work and for resuming their labors. The place where the trumpeter, he says, Josephus saying, right up here on this corner, that's where the priest would stand and play his trumpet. And this inscription says, right there, I've got it written there further up, for the place of trumpeting to, and that's all it says because it's broken off, for the place of trumpeting to, and so anyway, that was the place where the priest apparently would step up and play his trumpet to make an announcement of the beginning and end of the Sabbath. And again, that is from, I mean, that's Hebrew, that's ancient Hebrew. I mean, that's been there for, you know, 2,000 years. And what's interesting is it was broken. Part of the inscription was broken, but it appears that was from, I think it was Warren, one of these guys, but I'm pretty sure it was Warren, same guy, Charles Warren. When he was doing all of his tunneling, he was tunneling through all that debris, and they had to chip through this rock to keep going in the dirt. So they just had to chip off and broke that inscription and kept going. And so again, they haven't found the rest of it, but it's been recently broken off by Charles Warren's tunnels, which is kind of interesting. Okay, Steve, you want to have a question? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Selling their CDs during church service, you mean? Yeah, go ahead. No. Those were up here. Now, that was worse. They were up here. Right, right, right. But it was the same. Whoever owned these, I think, just took his business up here, if it was the priest. Again, I'd have to, but that Jesus was up here in the temple precincts clearing the temples. Right. Yep. 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 And if you go by, it's like, I've got something for you. I've got something for you. They go, you know, I'm walking by, they go, where are you from? It's like, well, I'm from Iowa. Iowa? I know. And no, you don't know anything about Iowa. It's like what they want. They'll ask you all the, it's like, they really care. This shopkeeper really cares about me. No, he doesn't. Yes, I would say, yeah. Yep. Yeah, yeah, I heard that. I haven't been there, but I heard the same thing. Yeah. One right after the other. And then they're deep, right? You just keep walking. Some of those, you get back there, you just keep going. It's like, how, you know, you got to be careful when you get back in there sometimes. Yes. Yep. And what's amazing, I'll say this, because I always mention Tony, I drew all these maps, I'm over there, I got the charts of where I want to go, and I'd get somewhere, and I'd be done taking pictures, like, and she'd go, follow me, and she'd lead me out. She always knew where we were, and I was always lost, you know? So, the book just looks like I knew what I was doing. Okay, any other questions before we go back to page 7? Okay, well, what we're looking at right there was the stone pavement. I'm trying to find my place here. Okay, 127, the model. Okay, I'm still on page 7, and I guess I'll point this out as we go by. The city on page 7, the city diagram there is of the time of Jesus. You can see the Temple Mount, the old city of David, where Herod's palace was, and the cross was on the outside of the wall. And then Herod Agrippa, Herod's grandson, extended the wall up and around. By this time, it says right there, the population of the city was 80,000 on the bottom right map on page 7. And there's 450 acres in that city right here. Herod Agrippa, 450 acres in that city, if you want to get some kind of a bearing there. Okay, let's turn to page 8. And now in 70 A.D., this is kind of what we're shooting for now. 70 A.D., Herod Agrippa does all of his extending of the city. Okay, we got the crucifixion. I want to show you this. One of the things he adds on, go to page 39. Because, again, if you notice there on that map, again, I should have said something about it, but way to the north in that northern wall of Herod Agrippa that he extended the city up there, he added a gate. Now, this is again, very revealing. He added a gate. Of course, it was buried. Just like we saw the western wall, all that stuff was buried. On top of that northern wall today, running right along the same rock line, you ask a good question about, are these stores, were they like in the rock or are they built? When you get up here on the northern wall of the city, let me see if I got up in, right up here. This is the modern city. This is the old city of David, Dome of the Rocks right there. This wall line right here follows the same line that Herod Agrippa's wall, when he extended north and to the west and included the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in his city. This is right there on the rock, the bedrock. In fact, some of the wall itself is bedrock coming right out of the ground. They just built right on top of it. Same way with the old walls of Herod Agrippa's and the walls today right here on the north. But here is the Damascus Gate running right along that same wall. This is the modern Damascus Gate. So if you look on page 38, we're looking at a wall and a gate built in 1530s by Suleiman the Great of the Ottoman Empire. He built all the way around the city, made it secure to keep guys like the Crusaders out. Good idea. And that is the Damascus Gate. It's a great gate, but it's not 2,000 years old. It's, 500 years old. You can see the arrow loops. Those are little slits where they get there and they can shoot arrows out. You can see up on top, I can't remember how to say that word, but that's where they poured the oil through the floor, the little balconies. But now, a few years ago, and I can't tell you the exact year, if I'd read through here or look somewhere, we could figure it out. But they got permission to excavate down directly below the Damascus Gate. Today's Damascus Gate from the 1500s, they got permission to excavate down low. So you see that bridge going into the Damascus Gate? That was not always like that. You go back and get photos of the Damascus Gate, and you can in the 1800s. Today, if you stand right here, if I'm standing there taking a picture of the Damascus Gate, and I look behind me, there's houses and businesses just as far as you can see, just packed one on top of another. It's a Muslim community right here. But you get a same picture in the 1800s, you're standing in a field. You look, there's nothing there. You're standing out just in a field looking at the Damascus Gate, okay? So there, you can just see the sand going right up to the Damascus Gate. People would walk in. That they got permission to remove all of that sand and dig down, so they had to put a bridge in to cover up the expanse. And now I'll go to page 39. On the right side of that page is that bridge going into the Damascus Gate. And now you look below it. You know what you're looking at right there? Herod Agrippa's gate. That's one of the pedestrian gates. They'd have the big gate, and then they'd have a pedestrian gate on the side. And what you're looking at right there is from 41, 42, 44 A.D., Herod Agrippa, when he extended. Now, that gate wasn't there in Jesus' day because that northern wall hadn't been extended. But Herod Agrippa, he laid down the, they finished the temple, they started repaving, and he extended the wall of the city up to that northern edge and built a gate. And so what you're looking at right there, you can see the molding down towards the bottom, the stone cut molding. You can see the decorative stonework there. I think once you get too far up on the arch, you're now into rebuilt stone by somebody after the time of Herod Agrippa. But from about, the door jams down, that's all original. And it continues all the way across the bottom of the Damascus Gate. You can see first century remains of Herod Agrippa's work, which is kind of interesting. I just want to point that out. You can read more about that. Does everybody understand what I've just said? Okay, now stay right here. Remember, I've told you a guy named Fleming, and just recently they saw the gate under the Eastern Gate. Remember how I talked about Fleming in the 60s fell down into a hole and took a snapshot, he fell into a tomb, took a snapshot. He took a snapshot of the top of a gate under the East Gate, which is exactly what you see here. You've got the modern Damascus, modern 1500s Damascus Gate, and underneath it, you've got the first century gate. Well, you go to the Eastern Gate, and his story makes a lot of sense. It goes directly underneath there would be the Eastern Gate that Jesus would have came in on Palm Sunday. Would still be there, most likely, unless someone dug it up and moved it somewhere. So anyway, keep that in mind. That's just something that takes place in the days of Herod Agrippa. So we're back on page 8, and I wanted to show you the Damascus Gate. Coming in after 70 A.D., the Jews revolted in 66 A.D., and when they came back in, the Roman legions came in, like I said. We should get a map here of this. I should probably get a good map instead of keep drawing this stuff. Here's the old city of David, the Temple Mound right here. That should be a lot square. It's pretty easy to draw a square if I take my time. They came in on the western side. They came, knocked the wall in this way. They came up and came across this area right here onto the Temple Mound. All the Jews in 66 A.D., when they drove the Romans out, they locked themselves into Fort Antoni, a great fortress built by Herod, named after his friend Mark Antony, Fort Antoni. And they locked themselves into here. So this was the first place that they attacked. But they're protected by a set of water. There was a natural water source right here, and rainwater would collect it, also made it into a pool. On the north side there, which served as a moat. Let me see if I can. Well, let's do this first. Go to page 242. The legion that's going to come in here is the 10th Roman legion. And from 70 A.D. on, that Roman legion, the 10th Roman legion, is going to be there. And I think the last ones remained there was around 410 A.D., I think it says right here. But this is a post, a pillar, very easy to see if you know where it's at. It took me a while to figure out where it was. But this is in the Christian quarter.
Now, if you've been to Jerusalem, you come in the Joppa Gate, you turn left and go up to up a street. You go a little bit further to the next street and turn left. You're going to go into a place there. I can't even remember what it's called. But there's a street that goes up, and there's a colonnaded street. They're kind of a covered street. And right in the middle of it, right in front of a restaurant, is this post. And it's kind of, I had to kind of zoom in on it, because right on top of that is a light pole coming out with a couple pop cans sitting on it. So I had to kind of make it look, authentic, which it is authentic, but they've kind of just like, well, let's put a light pole here. So it's got a light pole coming out of the top. But this right here is from the 10th row. If you look down, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines, LEG10, LEGX, and then FR. And what that refers to, that's all abbreviated. You know, like how we text? It's just like how we text. You go in 200 years, people won't be able to read our text messages. LOL. LOL, what does that mean? Well, same thing here. They're, in a sense, texting. Just like they didn't want to engrave all the way around the pillar, they would text. They would abbreviate it. And so this all, what you can see what it says there on the right side. It says M-N-E-O, and that's Marco Ennio, that's the name, Maximo, Legato Augustorium, if I say this right. And then here's the name of your legion, Legion 10 Fretensis, if I say Fretensis. And anyway, it's abbreviated L-E-G-X, L-E-G-X-F-R. And that is clearly identifying the 10th Roman Legion, which came in and took occupation of Jerusalem and was there until 410. There's a place where they encamped. In fact, as they do excavation work, you continuously find the remains, because there's several centuries of the remains of the 10th Roman Legions being there. Coins, objects, potsherds, inscriptions, games that they carved in the road. If you look, I'm going to show you this real quickly while we're here. Go to page 245. Just turn two pages. No, turn one page, page 244. And there you can see, this is in the Cardo. And I just happened upon this. And there's another place where I'll talk about it, that they've got another place where this is located. I mean, I'm not the one that discovered it. I'm not saying, oh, look what I found. I mean, I'm sure people, but I was like, well, look at this. But you see that carved in the Cardo, that's the pavement from 2,000 years ago. Carved in that is this little thing that looks like this. It's some kind of a game board. And that's carved right in there. That would be something that the Roman legions would have used there in the streets. They played a game or something while they're occupying the territory. Anyway, that's just the remains there. There's another pillar that was found with the impressions of Caesar Vespasian on it that was found in the city. All right, let's go back. To any questions on that? That's the 10th Roman legion. Let's go back to page 7. And, I'm going to talk about this again. I'm going to say this for the third time tonight. I'm trying to get to this right here. See if this will make sense. Here's your city of Jerusalem, again, a pathetic city. I mean, my drawing, great city, bad drawing. Coming, the Roman legions in 69 A.D., they came in the Joppa area here on the west side, came up to the Temple Mound, and all the Jews had locked themselves into Fort Antonia. Over on the north right here is the pools. They had to get over those pools to attack Fort Antonia. The Jews, they'd been there for 3 years, kind of locked themselves up. And so what they did, just like the Romans did at Masada, they built a ramp to go up and attack the city. They built a ramp over those pools up to Fort Antonia. Now, if you'll go with me to page 209, I'm going to show you this. Page 209. This is called today Ecce Homo. It's like this. It's Latin, Ecce Homo. It means behold the man. It has to do with Jesus. Because, again, church tradition sometimes gets things cloudy. But what you're looking at that in that photo right there is when the Romans came in. Actually, this is, on the north side there. That's part of the arch that they built to support the attack ramp up here. Since it was taken down, they went ahead and they turned it into, I'm going to draw it like this, they turned it into kind of like the Arch of Constantine or Arch of Titus. They made it into a memorial. And so this is all that remains of it. And you can see the base of it in one of those buildings there. It's some kind of a Christian place now. It's right along the Via Della Rosa in that area. But anyway, that's the remains of a Roman arch that they used to take the city, or to attack Fort Antonia. And the reason they got there is where that comes down, there's some pavement there. Now, I'm struggling here because I'm trying to say something really confusing. I'm going to jump ahead of time. Those pools
are going to be covered up in 135 AD by Hadrian. Okay, so they're going to be covered up. And they're going to put a Roman marketplace up here. So this is now a street in 135 AD and on. There are going to be games carved in here also for the Roman soldiers to play and different things like that. But also, because of the location, they thought that this was, the early church thought that this was the location of Fort Antonia, which it was, and that this pavement must have been where Jesus stood for his trial in front of Pilate. And so they called it Ecce Homo, behold the man, what Pilate said. But it can't be, it's not, because the pavement wasn't there until 135 by Hadrian. So in other words, that whole thing is a legend, it's not true. It's very close to being accurate, but archaeology and history has recorded that or proved that it's not the case. But that's why it's called Ecce Homo, it means behold the man. But it's the part of the Roman arch from 70 AD when they took Fort Antonia. Go to page 215. Man, I'm all over the map here again tonight. But now, they come in. Rome does take the temple. They burn it to the ground. They plunder it. They slaughter the Jews. The Jews are hiding. They're in the gutters. They're running out of the city. They're just being slaughtered. But here's the question. What happened to the temple stuff? The golden menorah, the table of showbread, you know, the Ark of the Covenant. No one really has a great idea where the Ark of the Covenant is at, okay? One, was it even in the temple of Herod? I say probably not, because I think it disappeared in Solomon's day. Or not in Solomon's day, but it disappeared from Solomon's temple before the Babylonian captivity. The Babylonians may have taken it. But remember, Nebuchadnezzar took that stuff, and then when his grandson was drinking out of those golden goblets, they all got sent back with Zerubbabel for the new temple. So they brought back the goblets and all the things from the original temple. The ark is never mentioned. The ark is never mentioned as being taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar, although they describe the menorah, they describe the table of showbread, they describe all these things as being taken, but the Ark of the Covenant is never mentioned. I mean, so we don't know. I mean, some people think it's buried underneath in a hidden compartment underneath the Temple Mount. That's a good guess. Some people think it got shipped off into Egypt somewhere and it's down there. That's a good guess. I used to just say it just got taken by the Babylonians, got melted down. But that was before I really understood. They really didn't take that stuff and melt it down. They preserved it and sent it back. So that really doesn't make much sense anymore, although I used to try and say that. So we don't know where the Ark of the Covenant's at. Some people think it was taken into heaven. Okay, that's really cool too. But I think it's somewhere, if anything, I'd guess it's on the Temple Mount. A lot of the Jews think it's buried in the Temple Mount. But there were things in the temple when Titus came in and conquered the city. His father began the Jewish War of 66 AD, became emperor like Josephus prophesied he would, which got Josephus promoted and taken to Rome as a celebrity, which allowed him to write the Jewish history, where we get Josephus' history from 70 to 90 AD. Then Titus, his son, took over as the general. He destroys the temple, and in 80 AD, I think it was 80 AD, 82 AD, they built him an arch in Rome to commemorate his war against the Jews. And here we have it, page 215. I didn't take this photo. My friend Bill Wallender was over there last summer in Rome and took this photo for me. But this is a picture of the Arch of Titus from 82 AD commemorating his defeat of the Jews in 70 AD. And you can see right there the arch. Now what's important on this is when you walk into that arch and you look to the right or to the left on the panels inside that arch, they've got describing, showing you what took place. We're going to look at that in just a moment. There's the inscription right there. It tells you what it says. You can read it. The Senate, the people of Rome, dedicate this to the divine Titus, son of the divine Vespasian. And then there's Vespasianus Augustus. And so it's given to him. Now, again, his brother, Domitian, who is the one who's going to put John the Apostle on the Isle of Patmos, is going to kill his brother Titus to become the emperor. So that's, you know, you're writing in the Bible now. You got Vespasian the father, Titus the son. Domitian kills his brother to take the title, puts John on the Isle of Patmos. Okay, there's more to that story we can go into. Okay, turn to page 216. Now we're going to be standing inside that arch. And we're going to take a big jump into history here in just a moment. But now we're inside that arch. And you can see the panels. And this is very important because this is in Rome. This is before, you know, Indiana Jones and the Ark, Lost of the Ark, what's that, you know,
I got the videos at home. But, you know, all this stuff about archaeology, this is just them recording what they saw. They didn't really care much what was in the Jerusalem temple. It's long, long away. It's, you know, way over there the Jews have it. But they saw something that came into the city. You can see what they saw. There you have it. On that description from 82 AD, you've got the menorah, the candlestand from the Temple Mount. And that menorah, there's different things carved in like certain synagogues. They've got something carved. They found different images of it. The image is basically the same. It's that round, loopy, you know, arch coming up there for the candlestand. We have to believe. This is my evidence. The golden menorah from the temple in 70 AD made it to Rome. How do you know? Boom. They carved it in the memorial. We brought this home. You can also see on the bottom page right there, or on the bottom photo, also in there is the table of showbread, which amazingly, there's some kind of an urn sitting on it. You see, there's a little bit of an urn there. And you can see the golden trumpet, or the silver trumpets that they've got carrying, that they brought back. So they're plundering the priestly temple, taking their trumpets, their showbread table. They're taking the golden urns. That second picture right there in the middle, there's like a TV camera there taking a photograph. I don't know. That's a Roman standard is what that's supposed to be. It looks like a TV camera. I just thought it was a TV camera. Okay. Interesting, correct? Interesting. Okay. So that's where they went. Now, what happened after that? Real quickly, you can read all the details in here, and I've put certain quotes in there so that I'm not just using the pictures, but historians record where these things move from 70 AD. Rome is overcome by the Vandals. And I'm trying to find on here, top of the page, top of page 217, that first paragraph right there. The temple treasures were kept in Rome by the Romans. Remember, this is now the Roman Empire. But in 312, Constantine, the first Christian emperor, takes over, makes Christianity legal. And just because of that, we call the Roman Empire. It's no longer the Roman Empire. It becomes the Byzantine Empire, okay, because they're going to move the capital to Constantinople. So that's just a break. So when we say the Romans and then the Byzantine, they're the same people. It's just, you know, it's just they switched religions. You understand what I'm saying? It's very simple. It sounds more complicated. Well, anyway, the Vandals were in turn, I'll go back here. The temple treasures were kept in Rome until the Roman fell to the Vandals. So now the Vandals come in. Remember, that's how in 400 AD the Vandals came in from Europe and they took and destroyed, plundered it. Okay, they took the temple, golden temple treasures. They took them because then when the Byzantine Empire comes, they recovered the temple treasures and took them to Constantinople. So they went back. The Vandals actually took these things up into Europe somewhere. And then when the Byzantine came up and they took the Christian Empire, Constantine and his group, they took those temple treasures over to Constantinople, to the new Rome. Okay, are you with me on that? Now, here's what's interesting. During that time, this would be right around the year 534, the Byzantine Empire. It wasn't Constantine that took it, but it was his Christian Empire from Constantine. They went up, got those temple treasures, and there's a Jew standing there that day when he saw these temple treasures coming into Constantinople during the big parade after having defeated the Vandals. And here's an account right here. This is written by one of the historians. He says, among these were the treasures of the Jews, which Titus, the son of Vespasian, together with certain officers had brought to Rome after the capture of Jerusalem. So there we've got the photograph. Now we've got a historian saying they were brought to Rome. And one of the Jews, seeing these things, approached one of those known to the emperor and said, quote, these treasures I think it inexpedient to carry into the palace of Byzantium, or your royal palace here. I don't think it's a good idea to bring the Jewish treasures into Constantinople. He says, indeed, it is not possible for them to be elsewhere than in the place where Solomon, the king of the Jews, formerly placed them. For it is because of these that, and here's the guy, his name is Gezeric, is what he calls him, captured the palace of the Romans when the Vandals took it from the Romans. And now the Roman army, or the Byzantine army, has captured them from the Vandals. Meaning whoever gets these loses them and everything else. When this had been brought to the ears of Emperor Justinian, okay, remember his name, Justinian, he became afraid and quickly sent everything to the sanctuaries of the Christians in Jerusalem. And now I'm going to introduce something to you way out into the future as far as our Bible history here. We're talking right around, let's say 617, right around this time period. We'll just say 600. The emperor is Justinian. He's in Constantinople. And they've just plundered the Vandals and brought in all the treasures, including the Jewish temple treasures that were taken from 70 AD to Rome, taken by the Vandals up to Europe, brought back now to Constantinople. Yay, we win. And then someone says, this is not a good thing. So he takes all those temple treasures and loads them up, it says historically, and shipped them back to Jerusalem. And we continue here. So it says the Nea church was plundered in 614. So then during this time period, what he does is, now you don't, and again, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but you don't know this. People do not, if you know this, I'm like very impressed because I just discovered this. I don't know why we don't know this. But one of the things that they built there in Jerusalem was this thing called the Nea church. Now when we get into the Byzantine Empire, and the Byzantine churches in Jerusalem, this is a key thing, the Nea church. It means new, the new church. It was a huge church. It's astronomically huge. It had vaults underneath, and no one knows what was in the vaults underneath. They think, many people think, Justinian, the emperor, was trying to rebuild a Christian Solomon's temple. And what we have here is a diagram on page 217 at the bottom. You have a diagram of the Nea church. It's designed just like the churches were of that time. You've got the three long areas there with the apse. How do you say that word? With the little curves placed up front where the middle one is where the pastor or the priest would have been standing and preaching. And this then existed for a while, but not for very long. Because the dates right here, I've got this right here at the bottom of this paragraph, returned to Jerusalem by Justinian, 534. 534 is when he returned the temple treasures to Jerusalem. And the history says he put them in the sanctuaries of the Christians. This church was being built at that time, it appears, for this very reason. It's not going to take very long, but by 614, the Persians, again, when I say Persians, it's not Muslims because there is no Muslims yet. It's the people that are going to become Muslims, but it's the Persians. They came in and took the city with the help of the Jews. So in 614, this church is trashed. It's destroyed, and it's been rebuilt a few years after that a couple times. But everything in there was plundered by the Persians and the Jews. So this is your best guess. These temple treasures disappear from recorded history in 614 when the Jews, along with the Persians, plunder Jerusalem. It's interesting, and we don't know where they're at. No one knows where they're at. Well, no one that's writing books knows where these temple treasures are at. Some would say they're in the Vatican. They're still in Rome at the Vatican. I'd like to think that's true, but you can see the history. That got plundered and taken by the Vandals. It's recorded that the temple treasures went to Constantinople. Justinian sent them back to Jerusalem. And in 614, my guess is the Jews of 614 took them and put them somewhere. Once they saw their treasures, they said, these are ours, and we don't know where they're at. Some people think they're still buried underneath the Nea church. Now, what's interesting, and this is why I'm telling you this, besides the historical facts, when you go to Jerusalem and you walk along the southern wall of the city, right in here, you're walking right along this wall right here. You know, the Zion Gate, the Dung Gate? You can see right there on that photo on page 217, that is the southeast corner of the front of the Nea church. It's still there. You can see the stones right there. And now you can take that corner that you see right there and put it down below in the diagram, and I've got a black line on the diagram. That's the southern wall. The southern wall cuts right across the Nea church. And you can see sticking out on the outside of the wall. The wall was built right over the Nea church, the remains of it. You can see that corner. Do you understand that? Does everybody understand what I'm saying there? Now, again, I think that's cool. Now, if you look on the inside, there's the southern, how do you say that word? Is it apse? Apse? It just seems like a strange word. It means like, you know, it's a little curved part of the front of the church. There's three of them. Turn the page. And I've got another good picture of the Nea church, part of it, from the top left there. But then you go to the right. Now, I've gone inside the wall. Took me a little bit of work to get here. But now I take a photograph, and I can see now that apse right there. And again, you can see the wall. See the arrow loop right on top of it? Do you understand what I'm saying? That arrow loop where they shot arrows out. I'm on the top of page 218 on the top right corner. That's the wall built in the 1500s. By the Ottoman Empire, Suleiman the Great, and that's where they would shoot arrows out. But it's built right over the top of the front of the Nea church. And there's a little sign there that tells you what it is. And there's a couple, and at the very bottom of page 218, there's a diagram of what the Nea church would have looked like. Okay? Now stay with me. Any questions on that? Again, what's that got to do with anything? I don't know.
I like it. It's interesting. Okay? I mean, it's history. A lot of things taking place there. But now, in this city of Jerusalem, when Hadrian comes in 132, the war began in 132, by 135, he's going to rename the city, Aulia Capitolina. I mean, he's going to rename the city, make it a Roman city. And one of the things he's going to do, he's going to build a cardo. And this is going to be inherited by the Byzantine Empire. So right here is the Nea Church is going to be right here. So that church that you see right here, that the front drawing right there, those little gates right there, then you've got like a courtyard. Does it look like the Temple Mount? I mean, look, you've got the outer court. You go into the holy place. I mean, you can see how it kind of looks like that. Very glorious. Anyway, that's sitting right there. That is the front sitting right here on the street. Right down here, on the front right here, is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Right here. And they would have a procession. The Byzantine, this is going to be a big deal right here, this Cardo Road. We'll see this Cardo Road. You can see it in the book. This is where they'd have a procession. The Romans, every city had a Cardo, a north-south road. They also had an east-west road. And coming right in here by the Joppa Gate, they'd come right in like this. But the problem was here, they hit the western wall, and they'd have to turn and go right up and out the Lion's Gate right there on Via Della Rosa. And so this is this way their streets were set up right there. Okay, and there's some things I'm going to say about that. Let's go, please, to, let's look at the Cardo. Real quick, look at the Cardo, see if I can find this here quick. I'm going back to the left. Yeah, go to the left. Go to page 212. 212. This is the Cardo. I'm going to wrap this up right here. We're getting a little further in history. Do you see? Do you feel us progressing through church history, or a little bit? Okay. We keep going back and coming forward. It's like we're taking runs at it. What you're looking at right here is the Cardo. The Byzantine Cardo is began in 135 by Hadrian the Roman, and then the Byzantine Empire when it became Christian, they just took over it. This is right in this. Most of these pictures are right in this general area right here. And you can see, once again, let's just take the photograph on the bottom left on page 212. You're standing on the road. Forget those square pillars. That's modern. Now, this is in the Jewish quarter. Right here. Right here. This is the Jewish quarter. And remember, in 1967, when the Jews came in, before they began to rebuild their city after the destruction by the Jordanians, what they did, they said, stop, let's excavate. So they excavated down, found everything they wanted to find. And then they said, okay, they put up some pillars, made the ground level again, and started building on top. So you got two levels in the Jewish quarter. You can walk around in the modern part of the city, but at any given time, you go down some steps, and now you're underneath looking at, well, in this case, the Cardo. And you can see those square pillars are holding up a ceiling, which is the modern street level up above. But you're down below in that photograph. So forget the square pillars. And what you're standing on there is you're in the middle of the road. And then you can see the curb, right? You can see the little square curb right there. And to the right of the photo, that's the sidewalk. And the columns, that would be supporting some kind of a colonnade or a covered sidewalk. So your street would be open, beep, 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 traffic going up and down the street. You step up on the curb, and now you're under a covered colonnade, and you could walk along these pillars, and there'd be traffic out here, and you're walking, and it'd be on both sides of the street. You got to get that image, because if you can see that, then you can continue to look at these things. And guess what's going to be right behind it? You're walking down the sidewalk. Okay, I'm on the road. Here's the pillars. I step up on the curb. Now I'm walking up and down the sidewalk. What's going to be right here? Stores. And so there you can see right there. You got the brick wall right there, the rock wall. And on the next page, you can see some of the storefronts that are still there. Now, this is not Bible history. This is Byzantine. This is after 135, after the Jews were driven out. They made it into a Roman city, Aulia Capitolina. And that's what you're looking at right there. Look at those pictures. You can see the different pictures there, the storefronts. Go to page 213, and you can see the pavement. And what they've done on some of these places, they've replaced some of the stones. They're a little bit smoother, but you can still see some of the original Byzantine street, or the streets of, 135 to 400, 500 A.D., that they would use. Go to the top, page 213, and guess where you're at? You're in the Cardo, but they've modernized it. Did you guys go down to this part right here? There's a bunch of little, in fact, we bought a painting in one of those guys. One of the guys painted a painting right there, and we bought it.
and it's in our living room. But we'll tell you that sometime too. But anyway, those are great little shops, but you're in the Cardo. You're walking in the old Byzantine Cardo, modernized. And they've got, you can see right there, you're in the Cardo, which is kind of cool. Now, I want to show you one more thing before we leave this subject, and that is on page 212, the Madaba map. This is a Madaba map. I'm going to read right here to you. A map found on the floor of a Byzantine church. Now, do you understand when I say Byzantine what I mean? That's the Roman Empire after 312 or 325, right in that time period, until they're overcome by the Muslims. So it's the Christian phase of the Roman Empire. We got the Roman Empire, and then in 312, Constantine comes in, and it becomes the Byzantine Empire. Constantine moves from Rome, the capital, to Constantinople. Why does he make the move? There's barbarians coming. That's one of the reasons. It's like, we keep getting invaded, let's just move further east. And he took the capital over there, and that's the Byzantine Empire. Nonetheless, a Byzantine church from around 500 A.D., it shows the Cardo, the main road of Jerusalem. The pillars and the photos below are detailed in this map from 1,500 years ago. Also notice the so-called Eastern Cardo, which is just above the Cardo Maximus on this map. The Eastern Cardo only has one row of columns. So if you look right there, I've got little white lines drawn down. The Cardo Road, you see that right there? And that is, you see the black spots right there? Those are the pillars of the Cardo. This map, again, I can't tell you for sure, but it's not little. You can buy it on postcards. You can see the Madaba map. It's kind of something you're going to see a lot of because it's a photograph of Jerusalem from 500 A.D., the way the Byzantine, not a photograph, but I mean, it's the way they pictured it. But it's in a church on the other side of the Jordan. And so it was something like they wanted to be in the Holy Land, but they couldn't be, so they made a map, and it's large. I don't know for sure how large it is, but I'm going to say it's like as big as this floor right in here. So they would walk, or they'd have service on it, per se, and they'd be standing in the Holy Land. You have Bible class right here. You can tell the Bible stories right here on your map. But anyway, I want you to notice two things. You see the Cardo? Notice where you see right there, it says the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It's got an arrow drawn to it. It's on this side of the street. And then you can see over there, there's another line drawn on which is on the east side of the street, the Nea Church. And there in 500 A.D., that Nea Church was huge. It was a big part of the map. As surely as this is the site of Jesus' crucifixion, the Nea Church was on that map. You can also find the Siloam Church, which is right almost at the end of the street, right about here. Okay, and I didn't label it on there. But I will tell you this real quickly, just to kind of flatter myself a little bit. But I labeled this map. I wrote a little article, made a blog about this, and put it up on the internet. And I mislabeled the Siloam Church. I labeled I put this diagram, and I was pointing at this church, Nea Church. Isn't that cool? I thought that was cool. And then someone made a comment and says, "You've mislabeled the Nea Church. That is the Church of Siloam down by the Pool of Siloam. The Nea Church is right up here," signed Lean Rittmeyer. Look, well, yes, sir. I'll make that change right away, sir. I made the change, and I got it because it's like, whoa. So that kind of scared me. So I try to make sure I do it right. Anyway, I'm going to have to quit right there. We'll go back to what we've done. We've kind of run into the Byzantine Empire. We're going to go back to 135, 780, kind of pick some stuff up there again next week. Kind of gives you a feel for it. Are there any questions before we wrap this up, I pray? Any questions at all? Okay, you know better than to ask a question. Good, you're learning. Okay, if you want any books right here, help yourself. I've got, again, Charles Warren and the Temple Mount, Biblical Archaeology Review, Warren Schaff, Biblical Archaeology Review, and the Reconstruction of Herod's Temple Mount, all written. This one's by Lean Rittmeyer himself. It's very, very, very good, obviously. Okay, I'm going to pray, and then Tony. Right, if you're not going to Jerusalem or you're not interested, then you can be free to go, grab something, and grab some books. Father, we do thank you for the chance to study these things. We thank you for preserving this stuff in history. We do ask that we may, again, study it correctly, that we may learn it accurately, that we may use it in our lives to justify our faith, to encourage our faith, and, again, to be confident of our future. We thank you for the chance to look into these things as you lead and guide each one of us in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you very much for being here.